On this week's episode, we double down with Casino Royale. Did The Office ruin parkour forever? Is Le Chiffre the dumbest smart villain in the game? And what's the difference between a warlord and a freedom fighter? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 24 Flames Per Second. This is the podcast that roasts the films we love the most, whether they're shaken or stirred. Everybody, as always, I'm your host, Robert Spiewak, and welcome to the show, everybody. And my phone's fucking going off in the middle of me trying to do an intro. Get out of my face. I got poker to play. High stakes poker. The highest stakes. Numbers I've only seen in math problems. But yeah, everybody, welcome to the show. It's another of our pre-election recording, post-election premiere episodes. So we don't know what the future looks like yet, gang. But strap in, we got a good one that we are doing this week. Casino Royale from 2006. Because there was supposed to be a James Bond movie coming out, but they pushed it again. So No Time to Die is too apt a title for the fucking movie. Yeah, everybody, but we're going back to the first Daniel Craig James Bond movie, and we're excited to get into it. I don't think there's any updates on the Patreon, so to speak, but if you listen to the show, you like it, feel like supporting it, head over to patreon.com/24flamespod. You can get a bunch of goodies over there that come out a couple different times a month, and it helps us keep the lights on. So go and check that out. Let's get into the show today. Start with co-host across the city from me this week, the M to my Mr. Demetrios, Casey Rahm.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's pretty good. I took the day off today because I had to go to the dentist, so it's been nice. A low-key day. Plenty of time to watch this 2.5-hour movie.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing like a long movie on a day off. So that answers my question. You did watch the movie this week.
I might have been a little under the influence of nitrous, so I dozed a few times. But
what do you know about it? You can share with us.
Yeah, I thought the most interesting thing about this particular James Bond movie is that it was the introduction of Daniel Craig as James Bond, who has been in now 5.
The fifth one is No Time to Die. No Time to Die will be number 5.
Yeah, so he'll have been in 5 by the time that comes out. And he was a relatively unknown actor before he was cast as James Bond, and there was kind of a lot of dissenters and people who weren't that excited about the new James Bond. And the one of the turning moments that made people decide maybe they would be okay with this guy was the scene of him rising out of the water in the Speedo. And it was a lot of people said, like, oh, it's a throwback to this other character in a previous movie. I'm sorry, I don't know James Bond.
It's the lady in the white suit from Dr. No.
Yeah,
but
exactly. Yeah. And so some people thought that was a, you know, like a nod, but it ended up being actually just kind of an accident. He was supposed to just sort of like float away in the script, but he kind of awkwardly ran into a sandbank, and so he was forced to stand up. And I just thought that was so perfect that he ended up being the perfect Bond because he did that just by accident.
Wow.
And then the other fun thing I learned is that the scene where the Aston Martin flips, it flips 7 times, which is a Guinness World Record. It is in the Guinness World Record book. For most flips via cannon or something very specific like that. But they had to destroy 3 Aston Martins worth $300,000 apiece to make that scene happen. So,
that's only 3 takes. Still pretty good.
Good.
That story about him getting out of the water is like, and I'll talk about this more on the post show, about just how stupid the damn internet is about. They're like, what a fickle, dumb thing for them to be like, oh, he'll be a good Bond, though, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got up out of some water. You think he couldn't, what did we think he was going to mess up? But yeah, that's good stuff. Thanks for bringing it. Well, then let's get on to introducing our panels this week. We'll start with the roasters. First up, we got video game journalist and horror expert. Find her on social media at SkateyB, Katie Bennett.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
It's good. It's good. I been practicing my Texas Hold'em.
Oh.
Not doing well. I have a really obvious tell, so it's hard for me to bluff.
How do you practice Texas Hold'em?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you can play against like a computer, I guess.
Okay.
You can do it online.
I don't know how bluffs factor into that then, but whatever.
It's true. You can't read a computer's bluff. But
we know you were. This was all a bluff, you liar.
The screen flickers slightly if they're bluffing. So.
Well, either way, it's great to have you here. We won't be playing Texas Hold'em, so don't worry about that.
Good.
And also roasting this week, filmmaker and political activist. You can find him on social media at True Cody Olson. Cody Olson.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. I'm excited to talk about this movie. It had been a long time since I'd seen it last. And I also appreciate my two favorite bits of trivia about this movie being referenced by Casey. The car flip and the sandbar are both, I don't know, they're just cool kind of little details in the making.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being here. It's great to have you. And on the defense this week, designer and actor, you can find him on social media at A K A Day, Kwesi Phillips.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. I actually played Texas Hold'em on my phone today. There's a Zynga game of Texas Everybody. Hold'em that you can play online. So it's definitely hard to tell some bluffs, but you can kind of see when people kind of go crazy because it's fake money. So everyone's like, fuck it, $100,000.
She's like, you know what? I'm feeling crazy tonight.
I call $2 million.
All in.
Yeah, it's fun to practice that. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about some Bond today.
Woo! Yeah, well, it's great to have everybody here. And so, Kwesi, first thing, same as always, we'll do a movie in a minute. Give us the full plot synopsis of Casino Royale, spoilers and all. We'll give you 60 seconds and a three count. Are you ready?
We'll see.
Okay. anybody placing bets on if Kwesi can do it or not?
I believe
bet the over. Bet the over.
Well, very good. Well, here we go. In 3, 2, 1, go.
James Bond is the newest 007 for MI6. It's spy with a license to kill. He gets sent to the Bahamas to uncover the plot of a potential terrorist plot. And through unearthing that, he realizes that a bomb is about to blow up in Miami. He goes to Miami, he disables the bomb just at the right minute so this airline doesn't blow up. But this extra villain, Le Chiffre, was betting on set up the thing so he could profit off of terrorism and use criminals' money to profit. Because it didn't happen, he had to set up a high-stakes poker game at the Casino Royale in Montenegro. Bond goes to try and win all the money. He does win all the money, but through that this crazy game of ups and downs and twists and turns, he almost dies. Le Chiffre kidnaps him, tries to torture it out of him, but an extra villain, who Le Chiffre borrowed money from, kills him in the process. James Bond and the accountant who traveled with the money, Vesper Lind, try to escape after falling in love. They try and go to Vienna, but then he realizes that Vesper Lind stole all the money. He goes to try and find him. She realizes that she's working with the organization that killed Bond. He tries to save her, but doesn't, and kills everyone in the process, and then he now realizes that he needs to go and figure it out.
Man, I was hoping. I think we'll count it because that was pretty damn good. Yeah,
that was close.
I think final sentence was like a basketball flying through the air.
Yeah,
counted.
Yeah,
and then it killed.
Fingers are off at the buzzer. We'll see what happens when it goes in.
I always love at the end of those when people are like, it starts becoming like more and more hyper, and they kill everyone, and then they all this happens.
And they die, and the next movie happens.
I mean, you were there. He gets to Mr. White. That's the end of the movie. But I love just like there's an extra villain, and then there's another extra villain, and then there's another extra villain.
all over this movie.
But yeah, for all intents and purposes, everybody, that is Casino Royale. And so, yeah, we are going to take a quick break. Quasi, when we come back, we'll get your opening statements, why you're here defending this first Daniel Craig Bond movie, everybody. And so we will be right back. And we're back, everybody. Welcome back to 24 Flames Per Second, our Casino Royale episode for the new James Bond movie that's coming out next year. And before the break, Quasi went all in, and it paid off in spades. Look at all those things. But yeah, and so now let's or on Movie in a Minute. That's what the hell I was even talking about. So yeah, Quasi, let's get your opening statements. Why are you here defending Casino Royale?
You are killing it with the poker puns, so keep them coming.
Okay.
So I am here because I love James Bond movies. I remember watching them with my my dad and my friends growing up, and watching Dr. No all the way through, Timothy Dalton and Sean Connery, James Lazenby and Roger Moore and Brosnan. And this, when this was coming out, I was a little nervous too. I didn't know what it was gonna be like with the change of pace, and they brought it back with such good realness and making the setting of James Bond work for the modern era. I think that going back to the first book in order to make a movie, I think was a smart choice, because it allowed them to kind of restructure Bond and figure out who he was. And so the story was trying to tell the forming of this personality and what it meant to be a Bond. And that's what I loved about this movie. It kind of took everything back to the basics. It had one of the best chase scenes I've ever seen with the parkour, and kind of set parkour on the map.
Parkour.
The office obliterated it.
Parkour.
Poor parkour. It deserves so much better than that death. But yeah, so I loved, it's really exciting, and I think that it's also, it brings back the suave and classicness of Bond, because Brosnan was great at the beginning, kind of, but by Die Another Day, what were we watching? It was nonsense. It was just green screen garbage. So bringing it back to the suaveness, the conversation on the train between him and Vesper Lynd is one of the greatest bits of dialogue and conversation I've seen in cinema. It's so good. That conversation that sets the tone between those two blew me away. It's so much fun to rewatch. So I love this movie for that. I think that the villain's really interesting. He's not always on top. You can see him struggling with pieces. He doesn't always win, but you can see him trying all, like, as much as he can to succeed, and you don't want him to win, but you kind of get it in some ways. And all the different dynamics that were coming through with the relationship with Vesper and everything, I thought was really interesting. And then Dame Judi Dench. Guys, that's why I'm here.
Awesome. I think I know we'll get to characters, and that's gonna be the most of what we talk about, I think. But let's go back to I forget which of you mentioned it, but we started with something about how the intro was this kind of this clear cut chunk of it. I think it's Cody, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay, so for me, I remember being really blown away by how both, like, stylish but bare bones the prologue for this movie is, the sort of black and white prologue, and how it's both action, but it also is, like, understanding the consequences of violence. Like, you feel that fight scene between Bond and the Contact. And so for me, but then immediately after the title sequence, we have what Quasi described as, yeah, a really good chase scene, but then the guy he's chasing goes into the embassy, and it feels like this pretty grounded spy world we've built that kind of, for the most part, follows the rules and consequences of the world that we know, immediately goes out the window when Bond just decides to blow up the entire embassy. And I feel like there are, like, more interesting story dynamics that could have come from just the weight of, like, what it means to violate what is one country's sovereign territory. It just felt like a really weird misstep after like a really strong opening. And so, yeah, I just felt like kind of weightless the way that they handled specifically the embassy part of the chase and how that affected the rest of the film.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of feels like they gloss over it, you know, like he gets in trouble for it at the beginning and it's this big scandal. But then once he's off, you know, once he kind of has that talk with M and then he goes off to the Bahamas, it's like they never come back to it again. I don't know. I just feel I'm kind of with you, Cody. I feel like that maybe deserved a little bit more weight than it had because he made a big whoopsie and they kind of just start right past it and like keep his promotion and everything. So
An embassy.
Look, guys, this is before WikiLeaks. Okay. The West was doing crap like this all over the world all the time. How many, you know, different governments have we overthrown from the West to all these other countries? We've done this stuff all the time. It's perfectly possible to me that the person was like, now, don't do that again. Okay, next mission.
This is the same year as WikiLeaks, so.
Okay, well, there you go.
So it's not implausible to me. It's more just like the choice to, I guess, support that narrative is interesting.
Yeah, for me, it's pretty implausible to me because it seems like they clearly didn't want to deal with the real world ramifications of the British government violating a nation's sovereign territory. Like that's a whole movie in and of itself. And I'm okay that they don't want to deal with that. I just don't understand why they tack that on to the end of that chase scene. And I think for me, that is sort of an issue with like other parts of this movie where things will happen that I think should be a bigger deal. You know, like even M sort of says, they want me to feed you to the wolves. I'm seriously considering doing it. But then like we said, he just still gets to keep his promotion. And so I guess I just don't know why they added that in to the end of the chase scene and why they didn't find another way. You know, even the moment where Bond sort of breaks through the drywall after the guy, you know, did a really kind of nice leap over it is already this like just brilliant microcosm of like this Bond is fast, but he's like big and he's going to smash through things. And I feel like they almost just didn't even need the embassy. It like raises more questions than it answers.
I feel like that kind of loosely ties into some of my thoughts just about like the pacing and some of the choices of scenes in this movie. So this movie's 2.5 hours long. And my personal philosophy is that if you're going to be longer than a tight 90, you really got to earn the rest of that time. And I don't feel like it earned it. And so you get that really long chase scene and then you're basically like past an hour into the movie before we even get to the casino. And then you're at the casino for a little bit and then it just has this like false ending almost. It's like you're like, oh, it feels like everything's wrapping up and everything's done. And then you look, you know, you pause Netflix and you're like, oh, there's 20 minutes left. So by the time it kind of like reignites the action and is like, here's another very long chase scene and action sequence and dramatic death. And now another like denouement at the end. It's like I've kind of checked out at that point. So there just were some I wish that there had been more just at the casino. I wish that had been the main focus of the story, but instead they spend over an hour leading up to it, which I don't think was fully necessary.
I think it's like I said at the beginning, there was a need at this point to bring back the franchise to a place where they wanted to build from. You have a new Bond, you're using the first book, and there's a lot of material in there that you're using to set up a structure to continue on from here. So the beginning needed to create and establish this new Bond's character. And I think that it did that well by putting him in a couple of situations so that you see how he solves his issues and how he goes about, you know, doing the job, right? And so once you know that, it's now, okay, you now have a villain that you can work with. So all of a sudden you are in a place where, okay, let's go to the casino. Let's see how he deals with this situation. How does he hold himself under pressure? What happens when he dies? You know, these type of things. Yeah, spoiler alert, he dies a little bit. And then at the end, you also now bring in this idea of this world that he lives in is always changing. It's never something you can predict, and he has to show how do you evolve with that. So now you feel like you've completed one thing, his world is never going to be that happy, and it needed to have something to push that. So you now are building in his trust issues. You're building in the world he's in and what he's trying to tackle from now on. And the bigger structures around him that he doesn't necessarily, he was trying to escape, but he can't. And he knows that he can do well as Bond to try and solve them. So I think that it's long for people, I suppose, for viewers who are kind of, yeah, like you're saying, they're like, okay, we're at hour two. Bring me something. Bring me some juice. So I get that. But I think that this Bond film was kind of here to set the tone for the future, and as well as create something really cool and establish something solid. Yes, and also action movies love packing that shit in, right? They love packing in like a couple thousand explosions as much as they can, right? So.
And I mean, I totally get that, and like I think it. The plot makes sense, and when I read like the quick summary of it on Wikipedia, I'm like, okay, this is a story that has beginning, a middle, and the end, and it makes sense. And so I really struggled figuring, like, I can't quite put my finger on why, when I'm sitting there watching this stretch out for 2.5 hours, it just doesn't play for me. It just doesn't. I feel like I'm getting, it's like as soon as I'm like, all right, this is what the plot is now, then it's like, nope, just kidding. It's this new thing now, and get used to that because it's about to change. I don't know. It just didn't keep me for some reason.
I have a theory of the point in the movie where that's happening, and I think it's when the chief dies, because
yes.
You see him really early in the film, and there's a pretty clear, him and Bond are, you know, on opposite sides of this. They're antagonistic. And then he dies pretty unceremoniously, but then there's still a whole probably 30 minutes left to film, I think.
Something like that.
I feel like that's the point where for me, I almost wanted the film to sort of, I don't know, maybe build up the tertiary villains a little bit more, like Mr. White, rather than, it felt like we were super jazzed for the showdown with the chief, and then it ends, and then you're like, oh, this is structured kind of strange, isn't it? Because it's still going.
I was going to say, you know, the movie might be long, but they spared you hours and hours and hours of poker. I think there's a line somewhere.
I did appreciate that. I was like, am I going to just watch them play poker for the next hour? But I did appreciate that.
You've been playing for 4 hours. It's time for a short break. And so let's talk. I know somebody was talking about the portrayal of poker playing in the movie. It might have been Katie, might have been Cody, I don't remember.
Well, we both I have a specific thought. I think Cody had some thoughts about how poker in general was portrayed, but I find it laughable that this villain, who is like a world-class banker to criminals, mathematical genius and poker expert, who is the one who organized this whole tournament, has the most painfully obvious tell known to man. He literally like brings his hand up to his forehead every time he's bluffing, and it was so painfully obvious that I thought for the whole first part of that whole sequence, I thought that he was just kind of fucking with James Bond and that he was pretending to have a really obvious tell so that he could do a little switcheroo at the end. But it turns out that was actually just his tell the whole time, and he only changed it when he realized that Bond was onto him. So, I mean, that's kind of a nitpicky thing. I know that they were trying to make poker understandable and accessible to everybody, even people who had never played poker before, so I get that. But I just wish they had gone with a little bit more of a subtle tell for the villain of the movie.
I think that's a fair point. And instead of talking about poker, I'm actually going to stay on Lashif, because I think he's maybe the dumbest smart villain I can, like, you know, the quote unquote, he's the dumbest, like, smart villain that I've seen in a while. And so in addition to his really obvious tell, the thing that I really bumped on is he's meeting with this warlord, or as he calls him, a freedom fighter. But he, you know, he gets this guy's money, and the guy's like, you know, really safe. Like, I don't even want to invest it. I just want to be able to access it from anywhere. He's like, great, grand, cool. He leaves. He hasn't even driven away yet, and he calls someone on a sat phone, and he goes, short a bunch of stock, I got the money. He literally says, like, I got the money, and you're just like, dude, it's sort of, I can imagine that as providing banking services to this type of clientele, you probably already make, like, reasonable money. Why are you putting your own life at risk at trying to play the stock market with this guy's money? Why not just, like, be cool about it and do your actual job. And, you know, then a few scenes later, he's lost millions of dollars that he didn't have. And it just, I just felt a little like less afraid of him and more like,
just to tack on to that before I let Kwesi defend that, can I just add that this villain who seems to require an inhaler to, you know, survive and be comfortable in his life, leaves, just gets up from the table and just leaves the inhaler that he needs it on him on all times, just on the table. Like, please bug this James Bond, that I know you're James Bond and I know you're MI6. Like, it just felt, that felt like another thing that felt intentional, but I don't think was intentional.
Bond even has to fiddle with it. You know, Bond doesn't even get to like glide over it and kind of, you know, just Bond has to walk up and like do a thing. And I'm just like, how'd that work? I don't know.
Okay, if you're smart like that, you have the resources of criminal empires. You're gonna make so much more money than if you play penny stocks. You know, so I understand his as a criminal mastermind, you have the ability to bring it. He's been doing this for years, I assume, because you don't just get an intro to an African warlord. There's levels to it, right? You gotta work your way up the criminal rankings to get to that point. So he must have been successful doing this.
Freedom fighter, please.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry. But you know, so you and you, the returns on that must have been very good. So why not use the money from a guy who's willing to cut your arm off? And I think, again, that confidence must have been, you know, one of the elements of hubris that is necessary for a good Bond villain. As it turns, in terms of poker, I think that, yes, we were spared a lot of boring hands because most hands are just folds and, like, little bit by little bit. But there are, I've watched a little bit of World Series, and I've seen a little bit of, like, the people, like, the guys who, like, can tell you when someone's bluffing. And some of those tells, man, you're like, oh, my God. you gotta get that under control, man, because this is not going to go well for you. You keep acting like this at the table.
That's why they wear sunglasses. Like,
yeah, but then they like fiddle with their chips in like a certain way, and they're like, as soon as they get a good hand, they start like fiddling with the amounts that they want to bet right away, and you're like, okay, you gotta keep it cool before you get into that, man. But yeah, it's also the drama of poker is really engaging in movies. I think like movies like Rounders, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but like there are movies that I remember, like pivotal poker scenes, like the drama of Hold'em is really fun to watch. So I get that you kind of want to have something that people can come to and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And like when Bond, you think that Bond's going to win, and then because of the tell, he thinks that he's won, and then he loses. It's kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? So yeah, I get that there's some limitations into like what you can put into a movie about poker that's going to, you know, bring an audience in, and what's going to actually be realistic as to what happens when you play Hold'em. So,
yeah.
I think I have an issue with this villain in general, and it's more of a frustration because, I mean, Mads Mikkelsen is amazing. I think he does really well in this role for what he was given. He's got a really great look. He's got like a glassy eye that cries blood. Like, that is so cool. That's so metal. And yet I feel like I just wanted more from him. Like, I wanted to know more about him. I wanted him to say more words, maybe. And just something about him wasn't very compelling to me. All the way up to his death, he's just is very unceremoniously executed abruptly in the middle of, like, one of the most intense scenes of the movie. And then you never hear about him ever again for the rest of the movie. So I guess I didn't need like a fully fleshed out like flashback backstory about him or anything, but I just would have liked to have seen him interact with Bond a little bit more and like have a little bit more of like a war of words against each other, and like maybe like they didn't even really have like an epic fight scene. Like, they literally just like played poker, and then he gets tortured by him, and then he dies. So I think I would have liked for them to have saved some of those really incredible action sequences for a showdown with this villain. I think it would have been a lot stronger than what they ended up doing.
And that's like maybe what I bump on sometimes when I think I, on one level, I appreciate that the pacing of the movie is such that we get action pretty much from the word go, but it also can sort of feel like that we're expending our biggest action scenes before we've really gotten into the plot. You know, I think a lot of people really remember the parkour chase, but it, in a way, it feels like, could that have been more impactful if there was more build up to the plot and that was shifted later instead of the plot? It, instead of, I think, having this clear trajectory that's like a, I don't know, graph that's going up along the y-axis, it's sort of like a sine and cosine graph, right? It's like, it kind of builds and then it sort of drops for the next act, and then, oh, they're in Monaco and it builds again and then it drops. And it maybe would have, I feel like, again, if maybe the 2.5 hours wouldn't have felt as long if there was just this little bit more steady but clear upward trajectory of momentum.
Yeah, I think that the way that this movie was structured, to me, works because of again, like I said, establishment. I think that the structure of Le Chiffre and kind of, you need to have something that's going to bring the impact of Bond right away. So yeah, the first scene being really, you know, gritty and kind of intense and claustrophobic in certain ways made you step into the world very quickly. And then you have something again that's going to have Bond interacting with his environment and kind of showcasing how he solves problems. And then you also now have the established action part. Now you need the suaveness. Now you need his social ability and the fact that what he can do in social settings in order to get what he wants and how he thinks in his in those type of environments. So that's, I think, why you need to have a little change of pace. And the casino environment and the scenes there showcase that in a lot of ways. How he works with the CIA officer and his relationship with Vesper and how he, you know, how that relationship starts to develop. I think that you need that little bit pacing so that you can see that happen and the success, not only with the action but with the suaveness. I think that that's why there's almost two different movies in a little bit of a way because of that. But they bring it under one roof to establish Bond in this new world.
Well, we're talking about all these other characters. Katie cryptically said she's got beef with all the characters before we started recording.
I did. So I feel like, okay, I know this is a James Bond movie. I know that he's our hero. He's our main character. I like what they, I know I'm supposed to roast this movie, but I like what they did with this James Bond. Like, I think he's a good James Bond. And so I don't mind that we kind of see him develop over time. But I really love like a good, like, ensemble cast and just good side characters to kind of help elevate the story of the main character in some ways. And I feel like a lot of the side characters were really underutilized. So, like, Vesper, you know, I think she's a really great, strong character, and I would have loved to see a little bit more of her. I understand why they kind of kept her kind of in the shadows for a lot of it, but really one of my main beefs is during the whole casino sequences, there's all these really interesting seeming side characters that are also competing in this tournament. And I would have loved to see more about them and hear more about them. Again, I don't need like a flashback or a backstory on each of those characters, but to me, it felt like they weren't really given enough to be like, to contribute to the scene other than to take up space. They kind of just were there to make the table look full when they could have really added to like some banter and really pepped up some of those poker scenes, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know how chatty people get during intense Texas Hold'em when there's billions of dollars on the line. But I would have been happy for just a few extra lines to some of those folks because I feel like it just would have made it more interesting.
Yeah, I think there's probably a few of them that only say like take or all in or, you know, or something like that. And like probably don't say any other words. You know, I'm thinking of like a couple in particular that you have no real sense of them at all. Though,
yeah.
I think the actors do what they can through facial expressions and, you know, I mean, credit them for that.
Yeah, I think that they did as great as they could with what was given to them. I wish that they had been given a little more, but this is a 2.5 hour movie. So maybe it would have been 3 hours if they all had their time in the spotlight, but
yeah, I can't imagine it'd be a chatty bunch at that table. I feel like it'd just be a lot of focus. And I don't even think the black guy at the table said anything. He like did number hands of like how much he was betting.
Yeah.
like he would knock on the table to check. So yeah, I can't imagine that there was a lot of chit chat going on inside at a table full of criminals.
I don't know. At the same time, though, when you're that rich, I feel like that can't seem like that kind of money is like casual at that point. So you should be kind of like, yeah, we're joking around. We make millions all the time.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. They got money. They don't have personalities.
Oh, because they have money.
Yeah. They gave that up a long time ago.
That's fair.
Well, everybody, we've about reached time to unmask. And so let's go around. We'll talk about how we really feel, no bluffing anymore. And so, Kwesi, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think this is my second favorite Bond movie. And it's, I know that, Katie, you have beef with the intro, but the Chris Cornell song is really great. And I kind of dug all the fun little casino stuff going on. So it ranks up highly for me in the intro, in terms of like the classic intro and the classic James Bond song. So everything kind of, for me, worked really well. And I agree with you guys that I have beef with like these movies that have like tertiary villains. Like I think that you can have max two. Like if you start having three villains, that's when you get into the, like Spider-Man had that problem. Both Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire had that problem. It makes things too complex. So you have the first guy in the Bahamas, then the Shifra, and then Mr. White. It's just like, pick a lane, guys. Let's just focus on one thing. So I think that I do have a problem with that, but I think it still was such a good reestablishment of this legend and of what this movie kind of represents to British cinema, but like cinema in general as a genre. So for me, I thought it was a great intro to reintroduction to the world.
Nice. Katie.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. Okay, I have complicated feelings about this movie. Objectively, it's a very good movie. It's very well made. It's beautifully shot. It's well acted. There's some of the best like action sequences I've ever seen. I think that Daniel Craig is a great James Bond. I think it's crazy that when people heard that he was cast, they all freaked out and were like, no, not him. Because I think he did a good job. But I guess at the end of the day, my take is just like, yeah, not for me. It's just not my kind of movie. They're fun. I've seen a couple of these in theaters, and they're very fun to watch with a big group of people and just get into the action and eat your popcorn. And they've got some pretty interesting villains too, but it's just not something that I feel like, oh yeah, I'll just put on Casino Royale on a rainy day, you know?
Nice. Cody?
I really like this film. I think it's easily the best of the Craig era, which isn't a knock on the Craig era. It's just like they came out so strong with this film, and the things that we talked about, I do still believe. I think it is at times a messy plot because, sort of like you said, Kwesi, we have both Mr. White, the freedom fighter, Le Chiffre. There's like a lot of sort of villains. And the guy in Madagascar, the parkour dude. So there's sort of, the plot can at times feel messy. However, each time you rewatch it, it kind of becomes more clear how tight it is, how like every scene leads to the next scene and every plot point is like, oh, they go here, so they figure that out, then they go here. So it's, even if there are certain times where I'm like, oh, I don't quite, it's a little strange that we went there, it all really works well as a whole. I think it's directed incredibly well. Like it's so steady. They don't do shaky cam. It's just like this beautiful tripod shots, and yet they know when to just like move it a little and give this like sense of action and motion. Martin Campbell, who also directed GoldenEye, so he's launched two different Bond eras, which is I think kind of cool. Daniel Craig gives a terrific performance. I think the emotions of this film are really strong, and it's grounded and brutal, but also stylish. I just absolutely love it.
I would just like to add that I did give the hot take that I don't enjoy this opening credit sequence, but the song itself is great. It's just the visual. It's all the gold and red I don't love, but that is just a personal aesthetic preference. I just wanted to clarify before somebody tweets at me that I'm hating on Chris Cornell. I'm not. It's a great song.
Yeah, Kwesi, did you say it was your third favorite Bond movie? Second. Oh, okay. It's my third favorite Bond movie.
It's the second favorite for me.
Okay. Yeah. I've actually, like, just out of happenstance, I happen to have watched this movie three times this year. once with some friends, because we were like, let's watch a James Bond movie in quarantine. Once when I was watching all the James Bond movies, and then the other day when I watched it for this. And it is like this pressure cooker of a movie. It's like, I think it is, it might be the actually like tightest plot of a Bond movie because of that thing. I think Cody, you were saying that like everything affects the next thing. And I think this one unravels in this really satisfying, like chewy way that like, at the core of these movies, like they're kind of a, like a little mystery movie because it's like a spy trying to get to the bottom of a thing. And this one just like, it doesn't really feel like there's like crazy twists until closer to the end, but every little thing is like kind of like, oh, he wasn't really like a huge bomb maker, he was just a guy with who made some bombs, and oh, it wasn't this but it was really that, and like that just kind of keeps happening, and it's just kind of, I think it does like earn its 2.5 hour long thing because of that. It feels like something new is always happening. And yeah, and I think Daniel Craig is a great James Bond. There are worse James Bonds.
Yep.
Absolutely. And so, which also, it's like not that sacred of a role. Let's get that clear. And we'll talk more about that in the extended play. But yeah. And then we didn't mention it, but we got a cutie little Jeffrey Wright in this movie too. Playing Felix, and he's so good. He's like, listen, man, I'm really bad at poker. You gotta take all my money.
So, you guys are making me appreciate this movie a little bit more.
That's what this podcast is all about.
Yep, that's why it works, guys.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think it's real good. I don't know. And also, it gave us the fucking parkour office scene, cold open. So. It's good stuff. Kwesi shaking his head. I think it's funny.
It's funny, but that hands down ruined parkour. That one scene. That's a great art.
That gainer into the refrigerator box.
Never take it seriously again.
Dang. Well, anyways, everybody, we're gonna keep talking on our extended play, which is our post show. That's just for our Patreon folks. So if you want to listen to that and a bunch of other great stuff, head over to patreon.com/24flamespod. And then if you want to give us your thoughts about James Bond, you can email us if you want at 24flamespod@gmail.com. But no dumbass James Bond opinions are allowed. Or you can find us on social media at 24flamespod. And yeah, everybody, wherever you get your podcasts, go leave a rating, review, subscribe so that we can make the show better. Other people can find the show. It's the greater good when you do stuff like that. This episode of 24 Flames Per Second was produced and hosted by me, Robert Spiewak, co-hosted by Casey Rom. And the panels this week on the roasting side was Katie Bennett and Cody Olson. And to round out our full house on the defense, Kwesi Phillips. And our show music is composed and performed by Rob Joins and Will Paulson. And our network and co-op Partyfish Media is produced by Kwesi Phillips, Will Paulson, and me. Everybody, we're super excited to keep rolling through November. This was one of our, well, it kind of was. We had this on the list a long time ago, and the movie kept getting kicked back. So we're thankful that we finally got to actually record this one as we continue on through November, which continues next month with Brave, which is our Thanksgiving movie next week. So come on back for that. And I know 2 weeks ago on the Pirates episode, I said Brave was next week, and it's really like 3 weeks away. So I hope you enjoyed School of Rock last week with our buddies from Impulse Control, because I forgot to announce that correctly. So it's a retraction. But yeah, everybody, we're going to be back next week. So everybody, hope you have a good rest of your week, and we will catch you then. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Fish Media.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.